An adventure into dependency injection. How many people are in this room because I have the words dependency injection on the screen? That's what I thought. All right. Dependency injection is a buzzword, and I'm going to be talking about it, but I just wanted to let you know that I'm going to be talking about it in the second half of the talk, okay? This talk is a big memory dump. This is about integrating search. This is about covering the search APIs and why and how you want to use search capability in your applications. You know, we have a lot of great search engines at our disposal, and a lot of people don't know that you can actually incorporate these things beyond just going to Google.com or, what's that other one called now? Bing. Bing.com. Does anybody know what Bing stands for? Well, who said Bing is not Google? That's the number one reason that I've heard, and I haven't heard anybody actually negate that yet. But the story that you'll get from Microsoft is not that. The story that you'll get is that Bing is a buzzword that they want to be able to verbatize. We're all used to saying Google this, Google that, right? But nobody says live this, live that. That sounds kind of stupid. So, you know, now you can say Bing it, and it just sounds kind of cool. It may be coincidental that it's you know, Bing is not Google. Microsoft is known for their wild acronyms. You know what XNA stands for, right? What happened? Oh, Google did. They called it Topeka. That's right. Yeah, XNA is not an acronym. That's what XNA stands for. It's a recursive acronym. So you can follow that in your brain to your heart's content. All right. Is this thing working? Oh, are you kidding? Oh, man. Hang on one second. I may have to do this. No, that's not the one. It's the one on the other side. That's all right. Hang on. Nope. Oh, there we go. All right. So got to put the sponsor slide up here. Let's everybody give a little round of applause for our sponsors. Yay. And for those of you that don't know me, my name is Miguel Castro, and I'm the official card-carrying smartass of Philly Code Camp. I'm a Microsoft MVP, la-di-da-di-da-di. Everybody know the slide, most boring slide in the world. Why are you taking a photograph of my slide? All right. All right, so let's talk about what I want you to take away from this talk, because this talk is a really big memory dump. It's a big, there's a lot of stuff that I throw in here, okay? We're going to intro the API for the three major search engines, okay? Everybody know the three major search engines, of course. We don't have to keep repeating their names. All of them expose an API. And what's interesting is that they each expose a different kind of API. And I want to give you an intro to this API because it's very useful to know. And it's very easy to use, believe it or not. And I'm going to show you how to do it with WCF. We've got to keep this Microsoft-centric. We're going to use a Microsoft technology, especially one that's an area of expertise for me, in using these APIs. The best thing that about this talk is the code that you're going to get. Everything that I'm going to show you, the code sample has it, and then some. And if I don't have time to show you certain things at the end, I'm going to at least describe what those things are so you'll know about it when you see the code. There's a lot of goodies in here. So I'm going to show you WCF usage on all three of the APIs, and then we're going to use dependency injection in one of its forms. Dependency injection is an extremely overloaded term. Anybody except a diehard alt.net founder will probably agree with me on that. Where's Jess? Would you agree that dependency injection is a pretty overloaded term? It covers a broad range of things. We're going to be using a small makeshift dependency injection container along with a couple of other patterns to expose all of these very different search engines in a common API. And then, time permitting, I'm going to give you a drag and drop solution for this with some controls that I've written. And I doubt we will have time for this, but I'm going to describe what that is to you because you'll have that available in code as well. All right? So first question is, why the heck am I doing this? Why are you interested in integrating search? More and more applications have search built into them today. We see that more on the web than we do in Windows. When you go to a site now, a lot of these sites will have their own search bar. Sometimes that will mean you're searching within their site, but a lot of times that means that you have the capability of searching outside of their site, but without having to leave the site. Isn't that a brilliant marketing move? You can do standard Google searches without ever leaving a Microsoft site, or Microsoft Google. Okay, never mind that statement. But you can do a regular Google search without leaving a specific site, or a Bing search. If you go to my blog, dotnetdude.com, I have a Bing search bar on my blog, and you can search either within my blog or on the web in general without ever leaving my blog. I don't ever want you to leave my site once you get there. I got way too many cool pictures on my site. I got one of the Cairo traffic that I mentioned earlier. You got to check it out. Anybody ever been to Egypt before? You have? You're from there. Okay, so you know exactly what I mean when I say Cairo traffic, right? There's no way you can possibly explain this to somebody that hasn't seen it.
Well, you're technically playing Frogger.
Completely. 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 Yep. And what's considered rude in this country is considered standard operating procedure in Cairo. So anyway, we can talk about that for hours later. All right, so prevent users from having to leave your site is one thing. You can search specific site or the internet in general. You can do that today. You can do that today with, go on Bing or on Google, and you preface your search with site colon something at a web address, and now you're limiting your search to that site. So you can have your code actually do that limitation for you if you want to put a search bar in your apps that limits you to that site. If you're a Windows application, a connected application, you're not exempt from this kind of stuff. There's nothing that says that you cannot have search built into a Windows or a WPF application. In fact, you can even use some pretty cool creativity. If you want to use the search API to do searches within your applications and then analyze them to provide information for your users, there's a whole lot of things you can do once you have access to this information. Search engines are probably the epitome of true service orientation. This is like the ultimate service that we can have access to. So these are the majors, okay? We all know about these, okay? We all know what Google is, originated the ad revenue model. Bing. Was anybody here expecting Bing when it came out? Is there anybody in this room that knew about Bing ahead of time before we were bombarded with those stream of consciousness commercials? Nobody, right? I'm an MVP. We know about things 4 months ahead of time. I had no idea where Bing came from. They've done a great job with it. I mean, Bing literally binged us into say what?
Bing Cashback.
Bing Cashback? Haven't seen that yet. No, I don't know what that is. You have to tell me later. Bing is not a live rebrand, by the way. This is a totally new search engine. It's a totally new set of algorithms. And then, of course, we got Yahoo, which still around, still making money, apparently. Yahoo had an interesting start. Yahoo started out as a hand-built list, for those of you that don't know that. They never really went out and crawled the internet. They had a staff of people that added a bunch of sites to a pre-made list, and that's the list that came up when you did searches. So still around is Alta Vista. Anybody still go to Alta Vista? They're still there. Lycos. It's a great way to obtain unwanted porn if you go to Lycos. You know, they got that little dog. Remember the little dog commercial? Lycos, go get it. Come back with a naked lady every time. Ask Jeeves. I've never really understood, but Ask Jeeves, among other sites, Ask Jeeves has licensed by Google or something like that. So I guess there's some search engines that actually license their algorithms or their search capability from other engines like Google or Bing.
How do they do it?
I really don't know. I'm really not. I don't get into that much because I don't spend my time there. But it's, legalities and shit. Did I just say shit on live? I did. Yeah, twice. Somebody had a question back there. I don't know, but if it is or if it's licensing somebody else's engine, they have to disclose it. So you would normally see it. That's why on Ask Jeeves it'll say powered by Google. So go to ask.com, and if they're powered by somebody else, they're going to show it on there, unless they're paying Uber bucks to not have to brand it like that. And I don't think anybody's got those Uber bucks anymore except Google, Bing, and Yahoo. Then there's some specialty engines. Wolfram Alpha. Anybody hear of this? It's a pretty weird and slick looking engine, isn't it? I try to find commonalities in all these things to see if I can bring in a common API like I'm going to show you guys how to do. There's nothing I could do to bring Wolfram Alpha into dependency injection here. There's just no commonality between this engine and anything else. Then there's some specialties that are piggybacked off known sites, like slash Uncle Sam off of Google has a specific search set of search algorithms to do government searches only. No, this is all open. There's nothing secure here. There's nothing secure. In fact, I'm not going to cover anything that's security related in this talk because there's nothing secure in these APIs. So let's talk about the APIs. Bing is the first one. Bing is not Google. I like that. Bing is very, very simple to use. It's exposed as an ASMX SOAP web service. We all remember this, right? ASMX, called Legacy in today's world. The simplest API to use. It really is. There's no extra code you gotta write. We can certainly use WCF with it. Bing, by the way, exposes a REST API as well. They're the most robust API of all the three engines. They expose SOAP, REST XML, and REST JSON. Unfortunately, for reasons that I'll explain later, REST XML doesn't operate well with WCF. However, you can do REST JSON, and I got an upcoming article in Code Magazine that'll be out in a month or so that's going to show you everything about the Bing API. Here, I'm only going to show you web searches. In this article, I show you how to do image, video, contact search, news search, all that stuff, and I show you both SOAP and REST. So we're going to be dealing with SOAP on the Bing API because it's by far the easiest one to use. It's a no-brainer. I go on till 1:45, right? Yep. You can use WCF through basic HTTP bindings. So anybody or WCF user in here? All right, WCF has all different bindings that you can use. Well, the basic HTTP binding is the binding that you use if you want to access legacy ASMX services. So there's no reason to use conventional web service technology. We're going to keep this real state-of-the-art here. We're cutting edge. So adding a service reference to a URL that I'm going to provide for you is the easiest way to access this SOAP API. It will generate the proxy for you as usual. It'll generate all the contracts. You don't have to write any code. You just instantiate the object and use it. End of story. The service takes information through a request and issues a response. It's as simple as that. You give it some information in the request. You give it an API key, which I'm going to discuss. You give it what type of a search this is. We're only going to be dealing with web searches here. But of course there's image searches, video searches, all sorts of different searches. If you want to give it a site name, you can. So there's additional things that you can give it. And at the end of the day, you're going to receive a response back. Okay? The Google. It's exposed as a REST API for JSON. This is the way Google does it. Now, the cool thing here is that as of .NET 3.5, WCF added REST capability. Anybody ever use that yet? It's very cool. It works kind of nice. You have a new binding called Web HTTP binding, and it's in a new assembly, by the way. It's not in the conventional system service model assembly. It's in systemservicemodel.web. And we can use WCF to access this JSON data, and I'm going to show you how. But we do have to write some code, because if we want to use WCF, so usually when you access JSON data, you're getting this big stream of JSON information. It's just big string, right? And you got to somehow parse through this. And different technologies have different ways of parsing through it. I'm very unfamiliar with jQuery, but it's my understanding that jQuery has JSON parsing ability built into it. Okay. Well, I'm not going to do that. I'm not a jQuery guy. I don't claim to be a jQuery guy. Not yet. I'm going to use WCF to do this. But I'm going to have to write some mapping stuff, and you're going to see what that's like. It's not complicated. It may be a little verbose, but it's not complicated. So I need to come up with some WCF contracts that represent the JSON information that I'm getting from Google. Then I'm going to write a service interface. You're going to see how that works. And I'm going to provide a certain method that I'm going to call with some standard information that makes up my request. So you're starting to see a commonality here as far as a request is concerned. API key, search type, site, looks pretty much the same as the one in Bing, right? Yahoo, very similar. It's REST also, but this one is, even though there's a JSON option, the XML option is by far the easiest to view from a browser. So XML, POX is called it, plain old XML. It's very easy to look at. It's very straightforward. And we can still use WCF to access this. WCF REST capability as of 3.5 can read and write both XML and JSON. Missing from that list is AtomPub. Right? WCF is not compatible with AtomPub yet. And Atom seems to be also part of the REST standard, the REST stack. But WCF does not provide the ability to read or write in Atom. But it does do JSON and XML, which I think are the more popular ones. Once again, we need to write some mapping contracts to map to this data. And the information that we have to feed the Yahoo API should look familiar now. API key, the query text, maybe some paging information, which we're not really going to get into, and we're going to receive a response back. So you see there's a commonality here to all three of these engines. But the interface and the way they expose their data is different, okay? They're dissimilar APIs as far as we're concerned. The Bing API uses SOAP. The Google uses JSON REST and the Yahoo one uses XML REST. Now, the first thing that you need is you need an API key. So each one of these engines, and you can Google for this, provided you're using Google, of course, right? You can Bing for this or you can Yahoo for this. We gotta be fair to all three here. You know, you go to bing.com and you say, you know, developer API, Bing developer API, and you'll get the homepage for it. And one of the things at the top will always be apply for a license key. The license keys are free. I have mine on here. I remove mine before I send the code to you guys. Not because it's a secret, but because I don't want you to use up my key. I think you're limited to something like 1,000 searches a day or something like that. And I don't want everybody in here to start using my API. And you're not going to be able to memorize it because it's quite long. Although this is being recorded now, isn't it? All right, so that bit me in the butt. But you apply for your own key. Apply for your own key. You freeloading bastards, apply for your own key, all right? They're free. They're absolutely free. In fact, I think Google actually either removed or upped the number of searches a day. So there's actually, there's either no limit or there's this massive limit. So it's a free key. So let's talk about programming the Bing API. And we're going to spend about 10 minutes, less than 10 minutes on each API, okay? The steps that we're going to follow, and I'm just going to list out the steps, and we're going to jump right to code, as you can see. So we're going to add a service reference, just like you do for any SOAP web service that we've done in the past. You got a WSDL URL. We're just going to add a service reference to this. It's going to generate everything for us. Now, we then need to instantiate. We need to create a request by instantiating the proxy. The proxy, for those of you that do WCF, the proxy is how we communicate, with a service. And the addition of this service reference has created this proxy for us. And this is our proxy here, live search port type client. I don't know why they still call it live. They just never changed it. The Bing, is that somebody's phone? Who is that? You want to admit it? Dude, he just busted on you. This guy sitting there, him. Was that Chris? That was your phone? You're getting double tagged there. All right. So when you instantiate a WCF proxy, no matter what it is that you're accessing in the background, you need to give it some kind of configuration, because the proxy is going to need three things to access the information. What are those three things? Very good. Charles got it. ABC, the ABCs of WCF. So we can give it these configuration parameters either declaratively or programmatically. When we first add a service reference, WCF will add all the declarative stuff for us in our config file. It does it automatically for us. Unfortunately, as you've heard me say in my WCF talks, it adds too much. It adds a default value for every potential binding configuration parameter, which is very intimidating for a beginner because they'll see this and they're like, oh, I don't want to use WCF. Look at all this crap I got to deal with. You don't have to deal with any of it. Nothing at all. And in fact, what I'm doing here is that I added my service reference and I removed all of the configuration stuff and I'm giving it everything that it needs programmatically. So you're going to see me provide the ABCs of WCF, the address, the binding, and the contract programmatically completely. The whole beauty of this is that I want to be able to take this little wrapper that I'm writing and I want to give it to another person and have them not have to worry about adding configuration information. Because remember, the configuration information is going to go at the client level in whatever app they're going to write. We're going to create an instance of an object called search request. We're going to set some properties, instantiate the proxy, send the request into the proxy through a method, and iterate the results. It's going to be as simple as that. So let's take a look at what the code does. And here's the form. So as you can see, Bing, Google, and Yahoo. Here's going to be my results area. And let's take a look at the Bing code. First of all, if you look at my project, I've added the reference. There it is right there. I called it Bing Search Service. Because there's a lot of material in this talk, everything here is pre-canned. I can't afford the luxury of writing code from scratch. But this is all I got to do. I'm grabbing my key. I have my key in the config file. The keys, I'm not going to show you the key. I'm not stupid. Say what? That's the license key that I'm talking about, yes. And you know what? I stand corrected. It's not Live Search Service anymore, is it? Oh, yeah, it is. Never mind. It's down there. All right, so I'm creating a request first. And the request, this is the entire path here. Okay, there's the object. This object came from that service reference. This is not a Miguel object. This is a Microsoft object that came from my adding the service reference. So I'm creating this request just by simply instantiating this. I could, you know, make it a little easier to read and have it import this, but I wanted to show you the entire namespace there because I'm a glutton for punishments. Then I'm just setting properties of an object. There's no magic mapping going on here. We don't have to write any contracts. This is conventional SOAP writing on the coattail of an already written service. Conventional SOAP. I have my request object. I set my key. I set my query text. And then I need to tell it what kind of search am I using. Is it going to be a web search? Is it going to be a video search or an image search? What? I'm only doing web. And it does this by setting the sources property as an instance of a source type array, and then you give it however many, this is an enum here, source type is an enum, and you give it however many of these you want. The idea is that you can perform one search that brings back web, video, and image results for one search text, all in one shot, which is kind of cool. And I show you how to do this in the article, but I'm not going to show you here. Here, I only have one item inside the array, and that's source type.web. This is totally optional. If you leave it out, it defaults to 2.0, and then market determines what your language is going to be for localization. Once that's done, now there's additional things you can do. You can set account, you know, this is how you do paging. And I'm not going to get into the details of paging unless we have a lot of extra time, which I don't believe we're going to have. So now comes the ABCs of WCF, okay? I need basic HTTP binding. I need to give it the address, the binding, and the contract, okay? The binding is going to be basic HTTP binding because I'm using WCF to access a conventional ASMX web service. The address is going to be my ASMX. So there's the address right there. I just have to wrap it up in an endpoint address. And now I am going to create an instance of the proxy. This is the proxy here. This was generated for me when I added my service reference. And I'm going to create an instance of the proxy and send to it the binding and the address. Now, alternatively, I can do this. When I added this service reference, this is what Visual Studio added for me. All of this stuff here, you see? And all of these things are just, these are default values for every possible binding configuration. I could actually remove these. But the endpoint that it's defining, there's my endpoint right there. See, there's the contract, the binding, and the address, and there's a name for that endpoint. So if I wanted to, I can keep that configuration there, and then I can instantiate my proxy, and there's an overload on the constructor where you can send that endpoint name. And then it'll read it off the config file. But I like to make this, there's very little you're going to change in way of configuration to get this to work. So I like it configured in code just so I can give it as a black box solution to my developers so they don't have to worry about config stuff. Then I'm going to create a response, I instantiated the proxy, and the proxy is in a variable called service. And I am going to instantiate a response object by calling the search method from that proxy and send the request in. Simple as that. Take the request, send it to the proxy through a method, receive a response. Doesn't get any simpler than that. Once I'm done with that response, the rest is iteration. What makes this look complicated is the fact that I didn't import any of these namespaces up on top, so they're kind of long. But all I'm doing here is that I'm taking the response, and if it's a web search that I did, I'm going to have a web object that I'm going to iterate through with a results property using this object. If it was a video response, it would be response.video.results. Image would be response.image. And that's the cool thing about this particular API, is that if I were to send all three of those types in this array, I would get back content inside this variable, the image variable, and the video variable, all in one shot. Kind of a cool thing, instead of doing three round trips. And all I'm doing from there is writing this stuff out to my text box. Is that pretty easy? I mean, it's really just conventional object usage. Yes, I got a question back there. That's paging stuff.
Yep.
There is, and by me not providing any paging information, it's automatically going to give me the first response item and the next 10. That's my limit. By default, it gives you 10. Absolutely. If you want more than that, you can set the page size. If you want 11 through 20, you can set your page start to 11 or your offset to 11 and leave your page size at 10. Absolutely. You control it with a page size and an offset. The offset is your starting point, and your page size is, of course, the number of results you get back. Received. That's an excellent point. So the gentleman is talking about this argument right here. This would be the one you want to worry about. But the 65536, the 64K default message size, it's a WCF response message size, is sufficient for a 10-item page. So the only time you need to increase, and I agree, this is probably the single most popular item to change when you're doing WCF. Because if you're returning collections or arrays of stuff, you may exceed this size rather easily. But in all my tests, in a 10-item page that's coming back from any of the search engines, this is more than sufficient. Now, nothing says that you can't increase that page size to 100 if you need to, in which case, I think it's probably going to blow up unless you increase that size. So, excellent point. Thank you. Say what? That's a loose usage of the word throttling, especially in WCF, because throttling is something specific in WCF, but yes, paging would be your throttling. Right. You'd be throttling it back is what you were doing. All right, so we're cool on the Bing API? All right, let's do the Google one. Now, I'm going to show you all three of these in usage in a second. Now, I want to make sure I don't go beyond. All right, I want 15. In the next 15 minutes, I want to cover the next two. So the Google API. Google API, set of WCF configuration parameters. We're going to need to give it address binding and contract. There is no SOAP service. There is nothing that we're going to add a service reference to and have all of this stuff generated for us. All Google gives us is a URL with some URL shaping capability. This is what REST is all about. Anybody do REST programming here? It's kind of cool, but you know, it can get quite verbose when you have to map it to WCF. We need to figure out what the API looks like and what the URL parameters are going to be. And the only way you can figure that out is by looking at the documentation. There is no service reference that we can set like there is in Bing. Once we have that service reference set, you can IntelliSense your way into the object model and pretty much figure out how it works. With a REST URL scenario, you can't do that. You have to know what to give that URL to get a response back. So somebody has to have documented this. And Google has a pretty good set of documentations, and so does Yahoo. And for that matter, Bing has an excellent one as well. So we're going to use WCF to address this base address, and then we're going to configure the binding to do something a little different. And I don't have a lot of experience with. The binding by default was not compatible with JSON encoding. It defaults to regular XML encoding. So I had to write a custom class to let it encode using JSON. And the custom class was nothing more than returning a different type in an enum. You'll see what it is. It's like three lines of code. But it's kind of like a cookie cutter. You do it once, you never worry about it, and you reuse it. This is the hard part, and it's not really hard, it's time consuming. I had to set up data contracts that map to this data. So when I did this, what I did is that I figured out what the actual URL was to do a conventional web search for the word Miguel A. Castro. And that came up in a URL. I initiated that URL and I got back some JSON data. I'm going to show you that JSON data, because what I had to do was take this JSON data apart and map a corresponding WCF data contract object model to it. And that was not a very difficult thing, but it took a little playing. This is the kind of thing you want somebody to do for you, so then you can just reuse it. Guess who has done that for you? Everybody say it at once.
You did.
That's right. So then, we need to set up a service contract. Remember, service contract defines the operations, right? The methods of our WCF call. Well, we have to then, all we know about the Google search engine is that a URL is going to initiate a search for us. We now have to provide an API to the programmer so they don't have to worry about this URL. They can call a method and send some arguments in, just like we did it in SOAP. And that's what I have to write a service contract for. Then I have to instantiate a proxy manually. I have to give it my address binding and contract, the usual WCF stuff. I'm going to call a method, obtain a response, iterate through the results. The rest is the same as Bing. Let's take a look at what that looks like in code. And let's go and close up Bing. And the Yahoo one we're going to screen through fast because it's the same process as what we're doing with Google. We're just dealing with XML data instead of JSON. So this is what happened. This is the URL up here. You see this URL? ajax.googleapis.com/ajax/services/search/web. Then version, key, put my app key in there, Q equals, and whatever your query is. That's the giant URL. If you were to take that URL right now, stick my key in there, and put it on a browser, you will get this information back. You will get it all in one line. So you have to sit there very tediously and start carriage returning your way to make it look readable. Now, this is JSON data. As you can see, once you start staring at it, it makes a lot of sense to you because these are my result items, and this is each specific item and its properties. Makes pretty decent sense when you look at it, right? What I got to do is that I got to turn this into a set of WCF data contracts, and that starts all the way up here. So this is where the work came in, okay? I started by creating a data contract. Now, if you guys have sat in my WCF intro talk, you know what a data contract is. It's a class decorated by data contract. I called it Google search result data. Now, this is my top level. So let's go back to this data. And in this top level, I got response data and probably something else down here somewhere if I would have continued to not be lazy and indent that out, okay? But I did figure out what it is. And there's my response data. There's something else called status, which you won't worry about here. But there's my response data. So this top level corresponds to the class I'm just showing you. And the first thing that I'm worried about is this response data. Now, this is very case sensitive, so it's got to be specific. But the beauty about, even though it's more work, the beauty about writing your own contracts now to map this stuff is that we can call the properties whatever we want as long as we map the name to what's exactly in the JSON. So now we got response data, which is obviously going to be some kind of other object. So let's take a look at what's inside response data. Inside response data, there is an array of results. And each result item, there's one right there, has all these different properties. So we got something called results that is an array, right? We just got to provide mapping for this. So let's take a look at response data. And here's response data. There's the mapping. I can call this whatever I want as long as this maps to the JSON data. And inside response data is an array of something called result item data. And I can call this whatever I want as long as this mapping corresponds directly in a case-sensitive fashion to what's listed in the JSON information. And now we can go to this one. And here's my result item data object, but make sure that it's mapped properly, and here's all the properties of it. And each one of these can be called whatever you want. Once again, that's the beauty of doing manual mapping, is that now, you know, Google in their infinite wisdom decided that they wanted to name everything lowercase, but I don't like lowercase public properties in my objects. So I'm calling them something a lot friendlier, something a lot nicer to the eye, but I am mapping them to whatever their corresponding item is in the JSON data. And all I'm doing is that I'm following, as you can see, I don't have to do everything. I only did three here. And there's seven or eight here. And I'm just following that mapping, and that's it. So at the end of the day, I'm gonna receive this object right here, which is the top level right there. Now, after I did that, I have to write a service contract. We need our contract. And here's my service contract right here. I call it iGoogle service, service contract, and I give it one or more operation. And I'm literally designing my API now. I can have as many methods as I want to shape this API however way I want. I wanted to keep it as simple as possible, so I gave you one method called getSearchResults that returns that top-level data contract, and I receive the minimum information that I'm going to want for this particular method, my key and my query. Now, this is your friendly API, but this needs to map over to a REST URL, and this is the way you map it over. This stuff here comes from a new assembly called system.servicemodel.webdll, a different namespace called system.servicemodel.web, and not only am I decorating this operation with the operation contract attribute, but I'm decorating it with a webget attribute, and I'm telling it what the URL is going to look like here. Now, this is a relative path relative to the base address that you saw earlier. You'll see that in a second in code. So you take that entire URL, and that's what performs your search. And you take whatever arguments you have here, once again, case sensitive, and you can stick them in that URL in between curly braces. It's very case sensitive. So whatever my developer sends into here is going to get positioned into there, and that URL is going to be executed. And when it gets executed, it's going to return JSON data that is going to get mapped into this hierarchy of data contracts. You see how that works? And there's the other one. There's query. That's why I showed you the URL at the beginning. You tell it if it's going to be a bare response or if the response is going to be wrapped in anything. In this case, it's not wrapped at all. It's all bare text, so we leave this as bare. And is it going to be JSON or XML? This is how you can. This is how WCF can talk to JSON data or XML data. And those are the two choices right now. In the future, if they decide to put AtomPub in here, you'd probably see it as an additional enum type on here. And now to use this, we go out to our code, bring up Google, and I got my query, I got my key, I got web HTTP binding. I'm turning security mode off, which I think is the default anyway. And is it the default?
Yeah.
It is? And here's where it gets a little weird, okay? Because I'm using JSON, I have to create a, and this gets a little hairy here, but I have to create a custom binding around my web HTTP binding. And I had to create, I had to set a behavior. It's a binding element, actually. I can do this declaratively or I can do it programmatically. This is the way you do it programmatically, and it kind of looks hairy. I don't want to get into the fine details of this, but I'm adding an extra behavior here, and I'm changing the content type mapper to an instance of a class that I wrote. And I got this right off the site. I mean, this was right. I didn't invent this, okay? This is just a step that I have to do. This class inherits from the web content type mapper, which is the default, and returns a JSON enumeration. Without it, it won't be able to parse the JSON. And once I do that, let's close this up. The rest is instantiating my proxy. But I didn't write a proxy. I'm going to generate a proxy dynamically by using the channel factory. Now, some of you that might have seen one of my talks where I go into this have seen the channel factory before. This is REST, so this is using the web channel factory. REST always sticks the word web in there. REST is an embracement of HTTP, so the word web is everywhere. And just like conventional channel factories, I'm telling you what my contract's going to be, and I'm instantiating the channel factory, sending that contract into the generic, and telling it what the binding and the address is. Now I got my address, my binding, and my contract. There's my three things. There's my custom binding. There's my root address. Remember, this is the root of the relative path that you saw in my operation. The whole thing put together makes the URL address. And once I got that proxy, well, that proxy becomes an instance of an object that implements this interface. So what does that proxy have? It's got whatever methods I listed out in here. And now I can call get search results, send to it the key query, return Google search data, and go ahead and start iterating through my object tree. Yes? I don't know if you can, but if you can, it'll be on that site. It's unfortunately, it's way above what I can talk about here in this time. Really? Yeah, if there's any way of doing it, they're going to document it well there. Well, I'm going to give you the end of the slide deck has the URL for every single API that you can go and look at. All the documentation's online, and I'm giving you the URLs for everything. So it'll be, if it exists, it'll definitely be there. And same thing for Bing and Yahoo. Yes, sir? System Service Model Web is a DLL that was added with a .NET 3.5 framework stack. So once you install 3.5, you'll have system.web.dll. It's an additional DLL. There it is, right there. You don't have it if all you have is .NET 3.0. You got to have 3.5. 3.0 gave us WCF. 3.5 added REST to that. Okay? Say that again? It's not. All of the REST stuff, it's in its own DLL and its own namespace. It's all in system.servicemodel.web. Okay? So the Yahoo API works exactly like what I just showed you. Okay? I'm not even going to bother with this because we still have a lot to do. So it works exactly like what I just showed you. The only difference is that now let's take a look at the Yahoo data. The Yahoo data, when I give it this URL, this is the URL right here, what I get back is information that looks like this. So now I got to read into the XML the same way I read into the JSON data. I have to look at the XML tags, what they look like, what the namespace is. Here's a subtag. Here's where the results start. Results set. Results set underscore web. Under results set underscore web, there's a result object that's got a bunch of properties here. Abstract, click URL, date, size. After that, I got another result. So there's my repetition. You see it? After that, I got another result. So you can see I got a whole bunch of them. What encapsulates those result tags is result set web. Above result set web is YSearch response. So I just, once I figured out that mapping or that hierarchy, I started writing my contracts. So here is my first contract, Yahoo search result data. There's the mapping to what's in the XML. The namespace was defined in the XML, so I'm defining the namespace here. There's my properties. There's my array of result items. I have to make sure it's mapped properly, and I'm going to go to result item data. Result item data has all the properties. I call them what I want as long as this matches exactly the information in the XML. And if it would have gone deeper than this, I would need to go deeper in my contracts as well. I'm providing mapping here. Yes? If there is, I'd like you to send me a link to it so I don't have to do this crap again. I'm serious. Is there a command? I don't know. I'm resending the question to you. I don't know. Is there one that actually does this, that actually writes contracts? I would suspect. That would be nice, and it would seem to me that it wouldn't be that difficult to write. Okay, here's your homework, all right? So you get to write this tool, and I'll be happy to post it on my blog and popularize it for you. And I don't even want to know your name. I'll just take credit for it. No, but, you know, you may be right. There may be very well be a tool like this. I don't know of one yet, but it seems to me that it wouldn't be that difficult to write. Right? Oh, I'm sorry. His question was, isn't there a tool that you can point to a REST URL and have it write the class structure that corresponds to that? And that, my answer was, I don't know of one, but it seems to me that there should be, because it wouldn't be. I don't know. Let's take this offline after. I do want to talk to you further about this because there has to be something out there. This took me a while to do, obviously. So
he's thinking of the old tool.
Huh? Is Don in here? This is beneath Don. I think so too. The question was excellent and what was that?
There is a tool. His name is Miguel.
I'm such a tool. Let's see this run. We've seen a lot of code. Let's see this thing actually work, okay? So let's bing it. And there we go. As you can see, I'm number one on a Bing list. Yes. Gotta love these vanity searches, right? The problem is if you take my middle initial out, you get this little freakazoid Puerto Rican kid that did a Disney movie a few years ago. His name is Miguel Castro too. Anybody ever seen Holes? Yeah. The Disney movie? He was in Holes. He was one of the little Latin kids. His name is Miguel Castro, and when I meet him, I just want to shoot him in the head. Because he's taken over my vanity search, man. And there's another Miguel Castro that works for Microsoft Research. I tell everybody that's me. But it's not. And then if I Google, let's clear. If I Google it, that works too. I got the paging set to 4. I had some paging code in there, so it's set to 4. And if I Yahoo it, there we go. So the search engines work. Pretty cool. Can I get an ooh and an ah? All right. Okay. So we got 3 dissimilar search engines. Can we agree on that? We're using the same technology for all 3, which is kind of cool, and it's definitely a tribute to the WCF architects that allow us to map to all these dissimilar technologies. But let's talk about the commonalities. What is similar here, okay? The search engines are different. One uses SOAP, one uses JSON REST, one uses XML REST. But what about commonalities? The commonalities are we created a request for all 3 of them. The request needed an API key. It needed some search text. It also had some additional information that was optional, but we're just going to stick with the required information, the key and the search text, the basic building blocks for doing a search. It also returned a response. All 3 of them returned a response based on that request, and that response had some commonalities too. Number 1, there was an array of items involved in different ways, but there was an array of items nonetheless. And there was some common information, primarily the title, the summary, and the URL, even though all 3 engines called it something different. Yahoo called it an abstract. I think Bing and Google call it a description. All 3 call it a title. And then there's different URLs. There's one called display URL. There's one called cache URL. We're going to stick with 1. So this is our commonality here, because what we're doing is that we're kind of building this into a one-size-fits-all container. So in order for me to do this, I'm going to work my way up in patterns, okay? I'm going to use dependency injection, but dependency injection rides on top of potentially multiple patterns. In my particular case, I'm using one called factory method. But before I do this, I have to create some abstractions. So I'm going to take this information here, which signifies the commonalities in all 3 search engines, and I'm going to codify this. I'm going to build some abstractions out of this, okay? So the first thing I'm going to do is that I'm going to write a class called API Request. And this class is going to contain all of this information that I can use for any search, no matter what search engine I want to use. We're now being completely search engine agnostic. Then I'm going to create a class called the API Response class, which is going to contain my response information. Then I'm going to create a Result Item class, which is going to contain the detail information of each particular response item, no matter what search engine it is. Then I'm going to create an interface. So no matter what search engine I'm using, I want to expose something, I'm going to expose the same thing to the public. And that's what my iSearch interface is going to be. Then I'm going to bring some dependency injection into it by wrapping the whole thing up in a container, which I'll call Search Factory. The word factory, the word builder, the word container, almost overloaded depending on your usage. But the Search Factory is what's going to provide the UI or the client a particular implementation of iSearch. One implementation may be Bing, one may be Google, one may be Yahoo. You may write up one in the future for Lycos if you really, really like your porn. So the search factory is going to determine that. So here's the search provider class. This is the concrete class, which is going to implement iSearch. iSearch exposes a very, very simple interface. One method, perform search, receives an API request, returns an API response. Does it get simpler than that? I want to keep this as simple as possible. I have to dumb it down for Jess. So Jess is standing in the corner, you know, like Elephant Man. I'm not an animal. So each provider class is going to implement specific search engine API in order to grab this request and turn it into a response. As simple as that. How it does it, it's irrelevant. Each one's going to be very different. So talk a little about dependency injection, because for reasons that I still haven't understood, me and Jess actually agreed on something here. Yeah, I'm surprised too. Various implementations of dependency injection, okay? When you look up dependency injection on the web, when you Bing it, when you Google it, when you Yahoo it, you're going to get different definitions. I kind of turn to the Bible on a lot of this stuff, the books written by Martin Fowler, probably one of the more respected patterns guys in the industry. And the guy thinks a lot the way I do. He's not a zealot to one way of doing things, and he'll be the first one to tell you it's a very overloaded term. And it's actually Martin Fowler himself that defined this as a $25 name for a $5 task. There's various implementations of DI. Mine is based on a pretty popular one called a factory method pattern. Okay? Some of them do a bridge pattern, an assembly pattern. Mine's pretty much using just a factory class. It's a builder class to build my abstraction and return an abstraction. And I can send into this class a list of other abstractions that the class can act upon. You're going to see this in code. The builder class uses these dependencies in whatever way it wants before returning my response. That's where it gets the term dependency injection. You're having the class do something, and you're just injecting a bunch of objects into it that it can act upon, and each one of those objects is just an abstraction. You provide the concretion. This will make better sense when I show you in code. So here's the search factory. The search factory is going to receive an iSearch interface through a constructor. It's going to build a request. It's going to perform a search, give you the response. And one of the constructors is also going to accept a list of other dependencies that it can act upon. I call these, what did I call them? I didn't have my name in here. I call these, I think they're statistic, iStatistic or something like that. You'll see it in a second in code. Where the provider comes from, where the implementation of iSearch comes from, can come from a number of sources. In my particular example, I have three simple methods in my code to instantiate each concrete class, each one that implements this, and I'm sending that class into the constructor of my dependency injection container. But some containers are designed to not receive anything in a constructor and perhaps go to a config file and figure out what concrete class to instantiate there. Some, you know, they're all designed differently. The bottom line is that the container always works with an abstraction. How it receives the implementation of that abstraction can vary from case to case. In my case, I'm sending it in through the constructor, trying to keep it real simple. Okay, so let's take a look at what that looks like. Okay, we're doing pretty good on time. All right, so close all but this, close that too. Let's go over to core. Here's API request. Pretty simple class, okay? Receives key and search text in the constructor. Sets page number, page size. Ignore that. Don't worry about that. Key and search text is all we need. As you can see, this is just building the request. But this is common. This is common information that any potential search engine is going to be able to use. I don't want to get too specific here. The response, same thing. Common information that every potential search engine is going to return to you. In my case, a collection of result item. And what's result item? I'm glad you asked. Title, body, URL. Once I start getting this specific to one search engine, I open up some more problems. So I want to keep this as common as possible, and for this example, as simple as possible. Now we got iSearch here. Very simple interface. Receives a request, returns a response. Okay? Now, I got this other thing here called iStatistic. iStatistic, I'll show you a little bit later in some other code, but all it is an interface where I can process, I can write a class that performs something custom based on that request and response. Perhaps I want to log it. Perhaps I want to audit it. Perhaps I want to analyze it to return some other information or to put some information in a database or send some emailing. Whatever it is I wanted to do, I wanted to have the ability to write any class that I want to act upon that request and response in whatever manner I want it. And I can have a collection of these things and send it in my dependency injection container. Because that container is simply going to take those and run a process statistic on each and every one of them. What they do is entirely up to you. Okay? So now that I have my abstraction set up, let's take a look at the individual ones. So here's Bing. This is another project. This project is a separate assembly called integratingsearch.bing. It's got the service reference to the Bing soap service. And it's got one class called Bing Search. And look what it implements, iSearch. And inside iSearch, I have to implement perform search. I'm doing the exact same code with just minor modifications that you saw in that form where I showed you the raw usage of the API. So I'm instantiating an actual Bing request, and I'm setting all the information in there. Okay? And I'm returning the results. As simple as that. And I'm receiving the API request. Now, the API request is the common request object that I wrote. So that's the one that's going to contain my search text and my key, right? So that's why I'm setting it here, key and search text off of a query. And I'm returning results. What is results returning? Well, it wants API response. So I got to take whatever the Bing results are, and there it is where I'm iterating through them. Where is it? Right here. And all I'm doing is that I am creating instances of my common object, the result item, with the information from the Bing search results. And I'm building my common list. So all I did was implement my provider. Now I go to Google. In Google, you'll see that I have all of my mapping classes, the same ones that I showed you, all my data contracts and my interface. I repeated all of them there, but they're in their own DLL now. Then I have one class called Google Search, which implements iSearch. And once again, I receive my API request, and I use that key in search text to build the Google stuff, using the same kind of code that you saw in the form earlier. And I return my data contract hierarchy that reads, that maps to the JSON data, and I iterate through that, and with each item in that hierarchy, I'm building my common object, the result item, which in turn builds the API response and returns that. So everything will shape down into the common object model. And for Yahoo, I'm doing the exact same thing. Did it for Bing, did it for Google, did it for Yahoo. That, of course, is the order of search engine preference, right, everybody? Did I do good? The D's in the room, we got to say that. And here is Yahoo search class. And here's all the mapping classes. This is all the data contracts that you saw earlier. And this one implements iSearch as well, receives my query, calls out to the API, returns its proprietary result item, and builds the common result item list and returns it up the chain. Once I have that, I'm going to put this together in my factory object. That's my dependency injection container. So that factory object is search factory. And search factory will receive in the constructor either an instance of an iSearch implementer or an instance of an iSearch implementer and a collection of iStatistic implementers, in case I want to do one or the other. And all I'm doing here is that I have a build request. I could have done this in one step, but I wanted to break it out into two. I have a build request object that returns the API request. That build request object gets called first. You send it a key in search text, and it just returns an instance of that. Because later, I'm going to take that and send it into the perform search in order to get my response. And here is where it doesn't matter what you send into it, as long as it's a request. And it already has the iSearch that you instantiated the factory with. So it doesn't know if it's Google, Yahoo, or Bing. It has no clue. All it knows is that it implements iSearch, which means there's a method in there called perform search. So as long as it knows that, it can perform search off the request that it receives, return a response, and return that response to you. And in the middle of that, if I happen to use the constructor that sends the instances of those statistics, I can just run a process statistic on each one because I've injected that in there. And one of them can be for logging, one can be for emailing, for whatever it is that you want. That's process statistics, works off request and response. So you have full access to both of those things, do whatever you want with them. Okay? Most common thing would probably be some kind of log into the database. So now to use these things, where's the Wind clients? Let's see, how are we on time? Yep, we're fine. Everybody with me so far? All right. Everybody find this stuff as cool as I am, as I do? Lie to me, go ahead. All right, so here's a duplicate of the form that you saw before, but now let's take a look at what this does. Now I'm instantiating an iSearch object using this type notation. Now this here is nothing more than a helper class, okay? SearchFactory.searchProvider. I just needed a place to put get search provider, so I put it in the factory, and here's what it is here. All I do is that I send to it that string, and because none of these DLLs that you saw, this is important. These DLLs are not referenced by this Windows client. That integrating search.bing and .google and .yahoo, when I count to three, everybody just turn around and look out the window at the same time. One, two, three. Just stare at him. Just stare at him. Stare at him. So each one of those three DLLs, you saw that I put those in a separate project. They do not get referenced by this Windows client, but they do have to be accessible. That means that you just drop them in the bin folder. Because what this little helper method is doing is that it's receiving the name of that class in a string and doing some laid down instantiation using our old friend activator.createInstance. And this will actually instantiate this class. So if I go back out to the form, here's the name of the class, comma, the assembly. So long as it can find it, it'll instantiate it. And down here, I'm instantiating the Google one. And down here, the Yahoo one. And the important thing here, where is it? The important thing here is that it's going to instantiate it into an amorphous object. But we're expecting each one of those instantiations to have a point of commonality. And what's that point of commonality? Our interface, iSearch. So that's why I'm able to cast it. Now, if somebody was dumb enough to write a class that does not implement iSearch and send it into this method, obviously it's going to fail. And in a real world, we'd be trapping against this somehow. Okay? So I'm just casting it to iSearch and returning it. So back to our form, let's go back up to Bing. At the end of the day here, this is going to be an instance of that class. And once I have that instance, I'm grabbing my static processors. There's just a little helper thing down here. How you get these is different in every case. I just wrote a little helper function to instantiate two objects that don't do a damn thing. So there's no code in there, okay? But one's called query logger, one's called response tracker. And each one of them implements iStatistic. So each one of them obviously has a method called process statistic. So I'm just going to take those two things, and I'm instantiating the search factory with them. There's my search processor, and there's my statistic processors in a list. And once I have that, I'm going to grab the request using the build request, send to it the key and query, and grab the response by calling perform search on that request. And depending on what I sent in right here, the search is going to be done using the appropriate provider. And there's your dependency injection for the day in this talk. And then I'm iterating through everything. And now, for now on, what's going to be different in the next lines of code is just this part here. Everything else is going to be the same. So as you can see in Google, it's just a different class. Everything else is the same. In Yahoo, it's a different class. Everything else is the same. I've abstracted away all of that specific API proprietary stuff in its own provider assembly, not only provider class, but its own individual assembly. So now without affecting this host, you can go or write a fourth one and just make the DLL accessible, and you can use this container. So now if I wanted to run this, I should be able to say, I want my middle initial there because I don't want the little Puerto Rican kid to show up. Let me say Bing it. There we go. Google it. And Yahoo. Works just fine, huh? Go ahead, you can clap. I don't, I can't live with the fact that the only guy that clapped is Jess. All right. Pretty cool so far? All right, we got 15 minutes exactly, or 14 minutes, so I could actually show you some pretty cool things. So now, we have a lot of commonality here, okay? You saw that the hard code is inside the providers, but I was still repeating a lot of stuff in the Bing button and the Google button and the Yahoo button. So let's try to streamline this a little bit. And, you know, anybody that has followed a lot of my talks since I got started doing this a few years ago knows that I kind of entered the community as an expert in one particular topic. Anybody remember what that topic was? Huh? Controls. Particularly web controls, but I've done some Windows stuff too. So I've wrapped this stuff up in controls. Why not? You know, once I start doing all this common stuff, I find myself repeating code all over the place. Might as well wrap it up in either another class, some kind of another factory, or even better, drag and drop UI control. So what I did is that I came up with a search input control and a results display control. And it's pretty cool because the search input control encapsulates three basic things: a label, a text box, and a button. And you can add things to this control. You can have properties that position it in different ways. Do whatever you want with it, okay? Very simple things. The results display control is designed to capture and display results from a search. And the cool thing about these things, well, first of all, the control, both of them are going to require your key and what provider type you're using. So the controls are not meant to work with the Bing, the Google, or the Yahoo API. They're meant to work with that dependency injection container that we did. So if you wanted to expand it with an AltaVista or a Lycos control provider later, you can certainly do that. So the controls just talk to that. So they're going to need a provider type and an API key. And you can provide these in properties, or you can provide them in the config file, okay? Now, the cool thing here, and this is where I was pretty proud, is that the search input can target a specific result display control, or it can automatically seek it out. In my case, I'm targeting a specific one because I'm going to show you a form now where all three searches appear together, okay? So with very, very little, actually, there's no code. This is where it gets totally cool. This is where I get to show off a little bit. And I got a little bit of a shyness problem. I don't know if you guys have noticed. Say what? Yeah. All right, so here's my form. And unfortunately, it's going to span the size of the screen. But so here, this is one control right here, as you can see by the tick marks. Here's another version of it, and here's another version of it. Here's one control, and one control. Now let's take a look at this one. This control is called search input one, and let's see what I have in here. As you can see, I give you the ability to change what the control displays, like enter search text. You can change that. Do you want to, what is the button text going to say? In this case, it says Bing. So, you know, I just added a bunch of interesting things here. Now, I could either let you enter the API license key directly in the control, or I can put it in the app setting in the config file, and then you tell it the name of that app setting key here. In this case, it's called Bing. And then for the provider type, I give you the provider type right here, as you can see. Integrating here, let me bring this out. So there's the provider type there. Just like you saw before, standard.NET type notation, right? Fully qualified class, comma, assembly. And just make the assembly accessible. Now, the result display control that I want this control to target is listed right here, results display one. And there's result display one right here. And result display one also requires, no, it doesn't require the key. Just the search input one requires the key. So now if I go over to the Google one, you'll see that the Google one looks exactly the same, but it's grabbing its key from a config setting called Google, and it's targeting a different result display control. So now if I go out to that config file, there's what the config file looks like right there. And there's my three keys. I could have taken this key and stuck it right in the property right there. I just wanted to give it a little more capability. I've also given this control asynchronous capability, which I don't have time to describe in detail, but I will tell you it uses the regular .NET asynchronous pattern, you know, the begin, end with the callback, async callback. That's all I'm really doing. So let's take a look at the code behind this form, okay? You see I have some links here just because I hate typing, right? So set search text, clear results, perform all searches. And then there's a checkbox here for perform asynchronous searches. So let's go to the form for this code, the code for this form, I'm sorry. And you can see that the check change just simply sets a property on each one of the search input controls. So you can set a Boolean for async search, yes or no. The set text sets the search text. You can do this all programmatically, obviously. You can clear programmatically. And you can actually perform the search programmatically. So you can automate all of this without any interaction from the user, as you're going to see now. So here it is. If I say set search text, that's just because I don't want to type my name three times. Now, I can say Bing it, Google it, or Yahoo it. Here, let's Bing it first. As you can see, it disabled the control temporarily, just a little added feature. Here's Google it and Yahoo it. So it works pretty slick, right? Now, let's say perform all searches. Who do you think is going to win?
Bing, of course.
Bing's going to win? That's a good answer. Let's see. Here we go. Now, why did Bing wing? Did I just say Bing wing? No, why did... All right. It sounds like somebody's name in Asia. All right. So, why did Bing win? It's not asynchronous. So I'm going to clear them all. Let's do it asynchronously now. Now, who do you think is going to win? Here we go. Google won. So, yeah. But the point of this exercise was not to ridicule anybody's search engine. The point of this exercise was that we performed all of that with completely a drag and drop approach, with no code whatsoever. And if I wanted to be really cool, because, you know, I need to leave you guys impressed in the cool that is I, I'm going to go over. I'm going to go over to another project here. Here it is, web client, and show you that I also have web versions of this control. So if I go to the designer, no, I don't have MVC versions. He's thinking it. He was thinking it. So there's my search input right there. And there should be search results here somewhere. I don't know what happened to them. Yeah, there they are. They just don't display anything. That was dumb of me. But anyway, each one of these, look at the properties. So here's search input. Let's go to search input 1. Search input 1, there's the provider type, the AP license key off of config just like before, and it's targeting a result display control called result display 1, and there's results display 1. So it works exactly the same way, just the web version of it. So now if I go over and run this web client, let's see what happens. This is the Chrome skin for Internet Explorer. And as you can see, set search text. Let's perform the first one. And there we go. Google it. There we go. And Yahoo it. And let's clear them all. And there's no asynchronous built into the web versions of these controls. So it's going to do one by one. And then render the whole thing at the end, of course, to eliminate postbacking. So it works exactly the same way. So wrapping these things up in a control is actually, I think, a pretty cool thing. You can always enhance these controls, add styling to them, add CSS capability, of course. I haven't done that just because it was lack of time. So pretty cool? Yeah. All right. Hold on. We're not done. We got 5 minutes, and unfortunately, I can't show you this, but I will give you the code, okay? So, well, I want to leave 5 minutes for Q&A and stuff, but you can always catch me afterwards. Something else that I want to do is that I really want to bring this into more state-of-the-art code writing style. And one of the things that are becoming more and more popular now, especially with the introduction of link and the introduction of extension methods, and more importantly, with the strengthening of the whole concept of DSLs, domain-specific languages, something that is a very, very powerful and very, very cool concept if you're a real alpha geek. You guys know what an alpha geek is? Who considers himself an alpha geek in this room? I know Jess does, because he knows what it is. All right, now I'm going to define alpha geek, and then I'm going to repeat the question. An alpha geek is somebody that reads tech while sitting on the can. Now, who's an alpha geek? There we go. And see, the women are doing this now.
Right? Usually using your mobile device.
Like a Kindle or an iPad or something, right? Or a WinPhone 7, right? So the whole concept of DSL is to write this this kind of an object model where to obtain information, instead of just instantiating an object and setting a bunch of properties, you have a more what's called now a fluent interface. I know you're very familiar with this. An interface where the IntelliSense alone will guide you through the steps and things that are available to you. A perfect example of a fluent interface that we've had since .NET 1 is the string object. The string object has a bunch of methods in it that return string. So if you want to trim, replace, and get a substring of something, you can say dot this, dot this, dot that. And each one returns the result, and then you continue on there, right? dot replace, dot trim, dot whatever. So here's an example of the Fluent interface that I wrote for this, where I give it, it's called Fluent Search. You say dot create request. Somebody's going to watch this and say, oh, that looks surprisingly like Tweet Sharp. The Tweet Sharp Fluent interface that the guys at, what is it, Dimebrain, I think it is, that they wrote was actually my inspiration behind this. So I give a lot of kudos to those guys. They wrote a Twitter interface that works like this. So you can say Fluent Search dot create request dot search engine, and you tell it what search engine you want, Bing, Google, Yahoo, whatever providers you have installed. And then you can say dot search for and some text, and you can end there. What if you don't want to end there? What if you want a page size of 5? You add dot page size of 5. What if you want page 1? Dot page number 1. What if you want a web search and an image search? I can just say dot web dot image, the way I've designed this. Simply by just saying dot web dot image, you tell it what kind of search you want. You obviously have to give it a key, so you can say dot use key. Now after you're all done, you can just say execute the request with a request.execute. But I also gave it the ability to say dot callback to, and then give it a response callback method. So now you can say request.execute async, and it'll work asynchronously, and then your callback will get called whenever you want. And I went one step further and gave you the ability to dump the form synchronization context into it so you don't have to worry about marshalling up to the UI thread. But this is a work in progress, but I'll give you what I got now. I'll make sure that it's posted. If you don't get it on the CodeCamp site, by Monday, just look on .netdude.com, and there's a downloads link. Very easy to follow tree. You'll find the CodeCamp files in there. Okay? So kind of something cool that I'm writing. It's a nice little fun project, but I already have plans on using this and enhancing my controls to work off this Fluent interface. So this is why it's called a DSL, a domain-specific language. This, in a sense, represents a search language that you can use. Okay? So there's more than one good search engine out there, okay? This war with Bing, Google, Yahoo, whatever, we got to accept the fact that all three are here and they're here to stay, okay? And all three are going to be important. You're not going to drive people away from Google just because Bing is very, very good, and it is very, very good. So we as developers have to account for the fact that they're here to stay, and I think it's in our best interest to know how to access all of them and not just focus on this one particular engine. So you learned some provider stuff. We got some dependency injection stuff. WCF was used throughout beginning to end in this session, so at no time did I ever parse anything manually. I used WCF to the best of my ability. And I think in general, adding search to applications is kind of a nice little aesthetic touch. Something that a user may go, oh, cool, it's got search built in. I don't have to go somewhere else to get it. So you never know. These are the, there's a great article on inversion of control in DI by Martin Fowler on this link. Here's the three links to all three APIs and their full documentation, instructions for getting keys, everything. You can get all this in .netdude.com and, say bye to the rest of the world since this is being streamed right now. Say hello to my wife. That sucked. Let's try it again. Say hi, Elena. All right, thanks for coming, guys.